This is Pittsburgh Explainer, a new podcast from 90.5 WESA. Our reporters help you understand some of the biggest news stories from southwestern Pennsylvania every Friday. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Liz Reed.
I'm Sarah Bowden, health and science reporter.
I'm Ariel Worthy, government and accountability reporter.
I'm Katie Blackley, and this week I'm reporting on the coronavirus.
It's Friday, March 13th. Today, the biggest news story in Pittsburgh is also the biggest news story in the world. Coronavirus has now spread to more than 100 countries, representing two-thirds of the world's population. In Pittsburgh, large events are being canceled, college classes are moving online, and everybody's timing how long they wash their hands. We'll dig into this one big story right after the break.
WESA's Good Question series is all about you, the listener. What do you want to know about the Pittsburgh region? Check out our stories and send in a question of your own at WESA.fm.
Sarah, I want to start with you. The World Health Organization is officially calling the coronavirus a global pandemic. What does that mean?
It's affecting essentially the entire world. The last time the WHO declared a global pandemic was during the swine flu pandemic in 2009. For practical reasons, we should be doing the exact same things we should have been doing before the WHO declared a pandemic. Wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands. Cover your mouth when you sneeze or cough. Practice social distancing.
So I've seen this animation going around about flattening the curve, and it's like this little graph that has, you know, one version of the graph has this like big spike where there's a bunch of cases of COVID-19 early on, and then the curve sort of flattens to show what it might look like if the cases are more spread out. So what is flattening the curve all about?
So we know the coronavirus / COVID-19 will eventually probably reach almost every part of the globe. But the question is, how fast will it come? Will we see kind of a trickle of cases, or are we going to get slammed with cases at once? Ideally, it's more of a marathon. We see sort of a slow incline. And that's good, because if we don't have as many cases all at once, then our healthcare system won't be overtaxed. Right now in Italy, where they're dealing with a very extreme epidemic when it comes to COVID-19, they're talking about rationing medical resources. So if they have a finite number of ventilators in a hospital and too many patients that all need that ventilator, they're talking about what sorts of criteria they consider to determine which patient gets the ventilator. Hopefully, we don't have to do that here in the U.S. Hopefully, we won't have to do that here in Allegheny County. And the way that we can make sure that the virus comes to our county in more of a slow, steady way is wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands, practice social distancing. It's important to note there haven't been any cases here in Allegheny County that have tested positive. We're recording right now at noon on Thursday. I'm surprised we haven't had any cases yet. I expect that to change. It may change by the time you're listening to this. Also, one of the reasons we may not have seen a case yet is because we haven't been doing a lot of testing here. And Liz, I know you've been reporting on that.
That's right. I've been talking to people with COVID-like symptoms and sort of like second order risk factors. For example, one person, they didn't travel to Italy or China, but she traveled through Los Angeles International Airport, which is a huge airport that serves people from all over the world. That person said her doctor, who's associated with UPMC, wanted to test her for COVID-19, but the doctor didn't have a way to do that.
That really surprises me, because in what I've heard from public health officials is that Allegheny County has been working for a while to prepare, and UPMC and Allegheny Health Network, they haven't indicated that they don't have the capacity to test. So what your reporting has found really surprises me.
It's not entirely clear to me why that particular doctor couldn't test. This patient just told me that her doctor said her hands were tied. I talked to another person whose husband goes to an Allegheny Health Network affiliated doctor and had a similar experience. The physician's assistant who saw him wanted to test but didn't know how to go about doing it. And at this time, neither Allegheny Health Network nor UPMC has shared their guidance for doctors about who to test and when, and they haven't yet answered questions about their current capacity to actually run tests. But we do know that overall, the United States has tested far, far fewer people than other countries. So think about South Korea, for example. They're testing something like 20,000 people a day. In the last 2 months, since January 18th, the United States, the entire country, has tested fewer people than that. One of the challenges is the availability of tests. right now, health systems have to send these tests out to the state or to private labs. They can't actually analyze them in-house. And UPMC told you on Monday at a press conference that they're working on an in-house test, right?
Yes, they're working on an in-house test, but they don't have a timeline for when that could be. It could be 2 weeks. It could be a month. They wouldn't say because they say they don't know. Some public health systems say that if they tested everybody who might be infected or if they tested everybody who requested a test, that would totally burden the healthcare system. But Liz, as you know, that doesn't give us a totally complete picture of then what's going on with this pandemic.
Right. In an ideal public health response to this kind of pandemic, you would be able to test everyone with symptoms. But we're just not in a place right now where we actually have enough tests. The more people we can test, the more we'll learn about the infection. I spoke with Dr. Amesh Adalja, who's an infectious disease expert at Johns Hopkins, about this.
If you look at this country like South Korea, where testing has been extensive, the case fatality rate is well below 1%. But in other countries, it's much higher. And there may be what's called the severity bias in the data, meaning that only the severe cases getting tested, that's going to give you a different picture of the outbreak as if you're testing mild cases.
He said a lot of the fear and panic we're seeing right now is based on this idea that there's a 3% fatality rate. But he says in reality, it's probably actually much lower. We're just only really testing the most severe cases.
But the problem with not testing everybody is that there are people that could be infected that are out in the community and then infecting other people who have underlying health conditions or elderly and therefore more vulnerable to COVID-19. And that in a way makes this pandemic worse because we don't know who's infected and who's healthy.
Which is, I guess, why so many measures are being taken to force people to practice social distancing. Ariel, you were at two press conferences held by the city of Pittsburgh on Wednesday. What did they announce?
So the first thing they announced early in the afternoon was that they canceled the St. Patrick's Day parade. It's been consistent since like 1950, so it was a pretty big deal that they canceled it. The second thing they announced was that they canceled the G7 summit, which the city was set to host. The third thing they announced was that city employees cannot travel by air internationally or domestically unless essential, and the mayor's office has to sign off on it. Public Safety Director Wendell Hissrick, he also announced that the city sent out letters to clubs, bars, and restaurants in the city asking them to lower their occupancy rate, but they also...
Is this just for the St. Patrick's Day festivities this weekend, or is this overall?
They said they're really focusing on it for St. Patrick's Day weekend, but they are going to just continue looking at it as this is an ongoing pandemic and as they're just kind of looking at it and how it's going to come into Allegheny County. And Hissrick also said that the bar task force will be in full force on Saturday night and that they will be closely monitoring occupancy rates in these bars on Saturday.
If they are one person over, the bar will be shut down for the remainder of the evening.
One of the things he really emphasized was the reason that they wanted lower occupancy rates was so that there aren't as many people in the bars. The CDC is recommending about a 3 to 6 foot distance between people. So if there are less people there, there's more room to spread out and less germs are being passed around. That's why he's saying they're really focusing on getting a lower occupancy rate.
What did you find out about city operations specifically? You know, should there be cases that come up in Allegheny County, will the city continue to function as normal?
Yeah, Peduto said that it will be business as usual for the city. You know, you can expect your garbage to be picked up, water to continue running, the traffic lights to continue working, you know, 911, you will still get a response. His main thing was that people do not need to panic. He also said that the city is well aware of the fact that we have a large health system in Pittsburgh and that they are fully expecting neighboring communities to come here when it does reach Allegheny County. So he said as of right now, they are looking for space for extra hospital beds, extra equipment and personnel, but he did not disclose where they are looking.
Katie, you've been following what Pittsburgh Public Schools and local colleges and universities are doing. What have you learned?
So Pittsburgh Public Schools this week came out with an operations and communications plan for students and employees and everybody affiliated with the school district. And it essentially had a lot of World Health Organization information. Wash your hands, wash your hands. I talked to PPS Chief of School Performance, David May Stein, So I asked him what would happen if someone was identified with a positive case affiliated with a school district, and he said there would not be a district-wide shutdown. It would just be a school. This actually happened Thursday with Colfax Elementary School in Squirrel Hill. They shut down because a student may have been exposed. So they closed temporarily, but there would not be a district-wide shutdown.
We will look at each case individually and how that one case would affect a school, a department, a facility, so that we're making sure we're taking every precaution, that we're not contributing to the possible further spread of the virus by isolating and cleaning and disinfecting.
They are preparing students to work remotely if they need to for 2 weeks. So they're putting together like packets and stuff that kids can do from home. But there's another big issue here is if they close these schools, there's a ton of kids on free and reduced breakfast and lunch. There are parents that can't get childcare in time. I mean, this could be a pretty big issue if they decide to close multiple schools.
I also think about the fact that a lot of these parents work in healthcare. That's a huge industry here in Pittsburgh. And if they don't have childcare, but they're desperately needed at work to deal with a potential outbreak, what happens? Where do these kids go?
I don't know.
There's no plan yet for that.
No plan yet for that.
Local universities announced this week, too, that they would be going to online classes, right?
I believe it's every school in the city. So Pitt was one of the first to announce it, followed by Carnegie Mellon and Duquesne, and they're all going online. A lot of them were in spring break, so they just extended their spring break. And they said, hey, if you're not in Pittsburgh already, just don't come back. After that, they're going to go online and work remotely. But this is challenging, too, because there are people who have chemistry labs that they have to finish. How are they going to do their experiments at home? Or people who are music majors, how are they going to practice with their orchestras or get lessons from their professors?
And I was just wondering, how are they going to handle graduation with this? Have they said that?
I spoke with Pitt Chancellor Patrick Gallagher the other day, and he was asked that same question. He didn't have a great answer, honestly. He just said, we're going to take it on a case-by-case basis. You know, hopefully we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Are the dorms still open? Are students able to go to dining halls, stuff like that?
Yes. So if you are already in Pittsburgh as a student, you can stay here. Dorms will operate as normal. The dining halls will operate as normal. But if you are not in the city, then they are asking you not to come back. Athletes are here too, and I think they're going to be staying around, but fans aren't necessarily going to be allowed to watch them play.
It's time for a quick break, and when we get back, in other news.
This is Ira Glass of This American Life, and I'm coming to Pittsburgh to give a talk that I call 7 Things I've Learned, which is basically just an excuse to tell a bunch of stories and play clips and play video and talk about how we make our radio show, talk about stuff we have not put on the air and never will put on the air, and talk about things I've seen as a reporter that have stuck with me. It's Saturday, March 21st at the Byam Theater. Tickets at trustarts.org/humanities. Again, trustarts.org/humanities.
It's time for our segment called In Other News, where we recommend a story you should check out this week. I actually put a moratorium on coronavirus-related news for this segment. So, Sarah, what else are you watching this week?
On Thursday, NPR posted a story about how the pole dancing community is working to get pole dancing to be recognized as an Olympic sport. If you've ever seen pole dancing, it's incredibly athletic and very artistic, and the Olympic sports I really enjoy are ice skating and gymnastics.
Rhythmic gymnastics?
Sometimes rhythmic gymnastics, but like there's an incredible amount of athleticism when it comes to pole dancing. So, and I think that if you're a fan of Simone Biles and her brand of gymnastics, you might be really into pole dancing.
So what are the chances? Like, did the story indicate what are the odds are that this could actually become an Olympic sport?
Well, right now they have observer status with some sort of international sports agency. And so it's...
What's observer status?
Means that, like, they have to get sort of a critical mass when it comes to participation to be, like, it's a temporary recognition, so they need a certain critical mass to reach a certain hurdle, if you will, when it comes to being verified as an official sport. There's lots and lots of steps to become an Olympic sport. I mean, people use it as a form of exercise. And if you've seen pole dancing in person, it can be really, really impressive. So I think this is great.
Ariel, what are you watching this week?
When I'm not working, I'm actually trying to kind of distract myself from the news. So I'm actually listening to a podcast that is not new, but I recently discovered, called The Stoop. One of the hosts is actually a public radio employee. The most recent episode they talked about was actually being a black woman in journalism. They talked to Jemele Hill, Aisha Roscoe with NPR. They talked about, one, how you look as a black person on TV, and they also talked about like having a black voice when it comes to radio. And Aisha Roscoe, that a lot of us know her voice, and she just like kind of talked about, you know, she's a Southern woman and she's a black woman, and so it was like,
did she get blowback, or did NPR get blowback when they hired her?
They did talk about how she actually did get a little bit of criticism, like on Twitter, like some people said they didn't like how her voice sounded, that she didn't sound intelligent. But then there were other people who were very supportive of her and said, you know, they loved her voice and like they love listening to her. So they really just kind of talked about how it is important to have these voices, literally and figuratively, when it comes to being in the news.
How much pressure is there on black people in public media to, quote unquote, sound white?
Yeah. And so like code switching is definitely like a part of the conversation when you talk about being in the media, because there's always the quote being professional and like having the professional hair and everything. So like there is this discussion of like code switching when you're a black person in the media.
Which is basically like sort of changing how you speak depending on the circumstances?
It's changing your speech or maybe behavior depending on who you are around. Usually it's mostly talked about when you're saying a black person is trying to kind of quote unquote drop their ethnicity, sort of, when they're talking and trying to sound more quote white or professional, just to not have certain stereotypes. I also heard Aisha Roscoe talk last summer, and she said, like, you know, she doesn't code switch. She talks like how she talks because this is who she is, and she's also still very professional, and everyone loves her. She sounds great.
Katie, what news story caught your attention this week?
This is an article from CityLab about a street in San Francisco called Market Street that has been car-free for 2 months, and so they do a check-in.
You know what?
Are you familiar with Market Street?
I was just in San Francisco with my family. We were on Market Street, and it was like the week before it went carless. I really wish I could have seen this because I used to live in the Bay Area. It's a huge thoroughfare.
It's a quick read. It's really easy, but it basically says there was an uptick in bike traffic, scooter traffic, pedestrian traffic, things you expect. But the arteries around that street didn't see a huge increase in vehicular congestion, which is something I think about a lot when I go to downtown Pittsburgh and to the Strip District in Pittsburgh. I just think, wow, wouldn't it be so cool if these didn't have cars on them? It would just, would they do open streets events, I think, 3 or 4 times a year, and they're huge successes. And I've always thought places like Market Square in downtown Pittsburgh, there's no reason cars should be down there, you know? So this was kind of, it was affirmative to me that these things can work even in major metropolitan areas.
That's Pittsburgh Explainer for this week. Thanks to my guests, Sarah Bowden, Ariel Worthy, and Katie Blackley.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Our show is also produced by Katie Blackley. Larkin Page Jacobs is our managing editor and engineered the show today. I'm your host, Liz Reed. You can find all of WESA's reporting on our website, WESA.fm, and of course on the air at 90.5 FM. Thanks for listening. See you next week. And wash your hands.